Hello and welcome to the Movie Bunker podcast with me, Matt.
Hey, it's me, Chris.
It's been ages, Chris.
I know.
We haven't done a film, but we had to come out of semi-retirement because it happened, Chris. It happened. I didn't have to pay for it.
Oh, God. What?
the film, Holmes and Watson, before anyone goes.
I was just going to say, what on earth are you talking about?
My special purpose. I got to use my special purpose.
The big one dropped, didn't it?
It did. Big time. And I was very happy. Overexcited I was.
The Razzie nominated, multiple award winning, or Razzie award winning, Holmes and Watson dropped. And we kind of had to bin off whatever we had planned, which was, I think, Jupiter Ascending. It was like, no, that can wait. This is now, here and now.
Yeah.
We need a piece of Holmes and Watson action.
I was so excited. And people kept telling me, I kept saying, because I was waiting, because I have a short memory span, so I have to watch it as close to recording as possible. And you were away at the weekend, so I couldn't watch the weekend. And then I kept telling people, oh, I'm going to watch Holmes and Watson. And they were like, oh, it's a horrible film. I stopped watching it. I'm like, the more people tell me I'm bad, it was the more excited I became. This is what I've become now.
Yeah. No one liked it at all. Nothing good to say about it.
I've not met someone yet that said anything apart from Jesus.
Well, we're here to find those little nuggets of positivity, I guess, out of these critically panned movies. That's what the Movie Bunker is all about. Am I right?
You are right. That's what we do. Well done. You did the Who without us having to artificially segue into it.
And we do get the help of some pretty good guests from the movie world, or certainly the movie journalism world. So we've had some friends join us on the podcast every other episode. If you're a subscriber to the podcast, then you'll know. But obviously, every other week, or as close to that as possible, we get someone from the movie business to talk about their critically panned movie that they defend the honor of. So basically, they pick something that their peers or their colleagues dissed, and they pick out the good stuff about it, which is kind of what we're all about, which is what I just said at the very beginning of that sentence.
Yeah, it's like when we do the review section and we find those 10 out of 10s, we end up just interviewing that person about the film is fundamentally what happened.
Yeah, so you have some great ones. So if you haven't already and you're new to the podcast, go into the vaults or into the bunker, if you like, and download our back catalogue, because there's loads of great guests, and some of them actually come back as well for a second helping.
We need to get our lawyers on the case, though, don't we, Chris? Because we're owed some money, surely.
Yes. So, yeah, a nice bit of information dropped, or a tidbit of information about Tank Girl's being rebooted. Margot Robbie's been touted as taking on or agreeing to do the role of Tank Girl, which we kind of called it twice, I think.
Yeah, when we were talking about Tank Girl, we mentioned that if it could go for a reboot, and someone like Margot Robbie after her role in Suicide Squad would have been absolutely ideal for the crazy zany role.
And she's Australian.
And someone listened and they've gone and done it. I wonder if they'll include the kangaroo penis this time, though.
I reckon they will, because if they've got any sort of commitment to the source material, then there's definitely got to be kangaroo penises. But also, I think we mentioned it in the top five episode. I think we did top five recasts, and I'm fairly certain she got an honourable mention as Tank Girl, because her role as Harley Quinn is on a par with Laurie Petty, who did Tank Girl originally. It's kind of in a bit kind of that kind of New York kind of thing. And I think if they went with the original kind of concept for Tank Girl and went, like, because it's set in the desert, isn't it? It's like dusty and, the kangaroos guys with the kangaroo penises. It's kind of got an Australian outbacky type feel, Mad Max feel to it. So she retained the original accent. Probably be a nice touch. I can see her in the role, but kind of think maybe I would prefer that they maybe went with someone maybe a little bit a bit of an unknown, but there you go. But I was really chuffed with that. I thought, yes, hopefully we do have listeners.
Well, if the film industry are working through our top fives, then we got some good stuff coming.
Yeah, and also the pitch as well, the new sort of segment we do on the interview podcast.
Yeah, we definitely need to hire some lawyers.
We're going to make it big, mate. We'll be able to afford to get some proper merch, like stickers and keyrings and stuff like that.
Oh, can you imagine a keyring? I can't wait to get myself a keyring.
The other thing that happened to me a couple of weeks ago, sorry to interrupt you, was we know we talked about Pointless.
Love Bit Pointless.
A fantastic game show, British game show, which basically, if you've not seen it before and you're not from the UK, it's basically you have to pick an answer to a question or a category, which not like the least recognised or less famous answer. So the idea is that you get a pointless answer as opposed to like a maximum score of 100. I'm explaining pointless.
You're doing it poorly as well. So they ask 100 people a question. You have to find an answer that they haven't come up with. As few as people as possible.
That's it, isn't it? What did I say? Something completely different.
Something random.
You had a pointless moment a while ago. You mentioned on the previous podcast where you, I think it was Ghost of Girlfriend's Past, which actress came up. Well,
tell me there's not been another one.
There was another category called Rebel Wilson. Actually, there was two. I've got 2 points on this. Rebel Wilson was one of them, or Rebels was one of them. It's like films to star Rebel Wilson. And I got two answers correct in this that were both pointless. Ghost Rider, which she cameos in.
Yes.
And Pain and Gain.
Yes.
Both pointless answers. So I would have, this is in the last segment of the episode as well. So you would, of the actual show. So you get 3 chances of getting a pointless answer. So I would have got that twice.
And you got 2 pointless answers.
Yeah, my son was so proud. And the other one was Sir Ben Kingsley films, or Sirs was like the category. And it's like Sir Patrick Stewart, Sir Ben Kingsley, and some other Sir films or TV shows that they've been in that are pointless. So I said, The Love Guru.
Right, yep. Where he plays, that was pointless.
Yes, it was. Piss mop guy.
Piss mop guy.
Yeah, so yes, just so if you listen to the podcast, you will get pointless answers on the fantastic game show that is pointless.
It will enrich your life.
So, Holmes and Watson then.
Holmes and Watson.
Here's the trailer.
Your Majesty, may I present to you the greatest detective of all time, Sherlock Holmes, and Dr. John Watson.
I love you.
Watson?
Oh!
Whew. What a looker, right?
She is stunning.
Sherlock Holmes. His methods are ingenious.
There.
He's a master of disguise.
What have you done with Sherlock?
Why, Watson?
I never left.
Oh, amazing.
And his mind is brilliant.
Angle of approach. Compensate for warp and flaw. Termination of mosquito.
Well done, Holmes.
Oh, my God! Watson, stop panicking!
A murder in Buckingham Palace.
Solve this case in 4 days or I will kill the Queen. Signed, Professor James Moriarty.
Come, Watson. We have a killer to catch.
Yeah, no shit, Sherlock.
Shall we begin the autopsy? Dr. Grace Hart.
A woman doctor?
Impossible.
Fortunately, we have a real doctor.
Yeah? Would you like some heroin?
Days left to live. Solve this case.
Her Majesty, would you mind if we had a picture together?
Watson?
Who's going to take the photograph?
I will take it. You see, it's sort of a self-photograph.
He's a real fan.
I swear, I never do this.
Hey, girl!
Hey, girl! The boys are
back in time again. Over by the window, the lighting's much better.
Yes, yes.
Oh, oh. Oh my God! Mother of shit!
It looks good on the trailer, doesn't it? I mean, you have to say.
What went wrong?
I mean, the pairing out last year, they're good, aren't they? These are good actors.
Yeah, John C. Reilly and the other chap, Will Ferrell, they're basically together, they kind of have formed themselves a little comedy duo.
Yeah, so we got like Talladega Nights, which I love. It makes me like pee a little bit in laughter. because it's so utterly insane and ridiculous in so many of the scenes that it's just brilliant. Step Brothers, which is again, that's maybe a guilty pleasure one because that's not generally seen as a very good film.
I totally love that. It's very watchable. I watch it a lot. I've seen it like recently. It's been on Comedy Central a couple of times, and I've just stuck with it because it's got some good moments. And I think the reason why is because John C. Reilly just is sublime in that role. Will Farrow, I can take or leave. He's kind of he's lost. He's gone out of favour with me a bit. But John C. Reilly just gets better and better.
I mean, not even just comedy roles, but serious roles, everything in between. He's just a fantastic actor.
This film, it was, I guess on paper, was going to be like some sort of...
Oh, it's a slam dunk on paper. Absolute slam dunk. I mean, the director, you got him?
Ethan Coen, basically. Yeah. I don't think he's related to the Coen brothers, is he?
I don't think so.
that would be embarrassed. But he's not got a great kind of filmography behind him. He's done like Men in Black 3, or he's been co-writer or co-producer on it. He's not exactly sort of directed very many films. So.
Yeah, but he's done good stuff. I mean, Men in Black 3, probably the worst of them. He's done Tropic Thunder and Madagascar 2, Escape to Africa.
Great films.
Great films.
And absolutely, he's done some great TV films as well, hasn't he?
Yeah, lots and lots of TV. More writing than anything else, I think. Am I in the writing section?
Yeah, he's kind of, he writes a lot of it, or co-writes, and is kind of producing.
But it seems like he started, Idiocracy, which is a great film, which is almost turning into some sort of documentary about the times we're living in right now. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
I've never seen it.
It's a 2006 film. It's brilliant. It's really, really good about how the world gets, like, this guy, this really average intelligence guy, gets frozen and then woken up in the future, and but he's just held as a genius because, like, of the dumbing down of everybody's just accelerated whilst he's been asleep, so that this just guy with like below average intelligence now is seen as like a world conquering genius when he wakes up.
That's interesting.
But yeah, I mean, the opening sequence is just brilliant because it's just got like these two families, and it's got like this middle class family that are waiting for the right time to have kids, and then they can't really have kids. And then whilst they keep sort of cutting these documentary sort of scenes of them interviewing this couple about, so then there's this other guy that's just out, like he's like a trailer trash type guy, just out there fucking having kids. And like there's like his family tree going, all the other people are just like slowly getting older and more wizened and can't now have kids, and they're like infighting and stuff. And yeah, it just sort of like, and slowly, you know, these people just breeding and inbreeding and breeding, and, you know, not caring about their kids and education and stuff. And it's a really good film. Really good film. The premise is slightly better than the film, if you know what I mean. It's like it kind of loses its way halfway through. But, still worth a watch. Then Tropic Thunder was really good. No one can argue that film wasn't amazing. Madagascar was good. Men in Black 3 was a bit, and then Get Hard, and then Holmes and Watson. So,
okay. So, I might have to check out at least one of his other movies and that I've not seen.
Yeah.
Should we touch on the cast? Because the cast, I mean, I knew there were some big people in this movie, but I didn't realise it had the kind of the talent on screen that it has, because obviously we've mentioned Will Farrell and John C. Reilly, which in their own right should be able to do something pretty spectacular on screen.
Yeah, they should be able to carry any film on their own, really.
You get Rebecca Hall, who you've seen in a lot of stuff, Iron Man 3, One Thing. But she carries a lot of lead roles herself as well. Rob Brydon might not be familiar with people over on the other side of the pond, but Rob Brydon's a great British comedic actor who can add tone and gravity to anything. He's fantastic.
Yeah, if you want to see his back catalogue, check out Gavin and Stacey. He's brilliant in that.
Yeah, he's just sublime. Kelly MacDonald, notably probably everyone would remember from Trainspotting, and great Scottish actress. A couple of other people
Boardwalk Empire as well, I think, for the people across the pond. She was in that. Yeah. And I think she was the voice of Brave as well.
She was indeed, and she was in a quite a recent Black Mirror episode too. Pam Ferris, who we would recognize as Queen, played Queen Victoria. She's pretty decent in majority of everything she does. And you get some big people like Ralph Fiennes. Sorry.
Steve Coogan's not even listed here.
Yeah, I think he must be down the list quite far. But yeah, Steve Coogan has a pretty cool part in this. He does, I think, a pretty good job with what he's got. But Ralph Fiennes was the big surprise for me because what the heck was that all about? I mean, hardly says anything.
Yeah.
He plays Professor James Moriarty. So you would think this would be a major good speaking part or role, but he says fuck all in this.
He plays Moriarty and the sort of lookalike guy, which I didn't really know where that was going and what the point of that was.
There was no point to it. It was a fake kind of doppelganger that he hires to play himself. It's confusing. So the plot of this is basically, there is no plot, essentially. Well,
there is a plot. Come on.
There is a plot, but like it's a humorous take on Sir Arthur Conan.
Debatable.
Conan Doyle's classic mysteries featuring Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson. So it's a humorous take. So there you go. That's it in like a nutshell plot synopsis. They don't actually bother to give you any plot or plop on any of the IMD or Rotten Tomato. It's just basically that this is a film that is about...
It's a humorous film, they say.
These two characters, and fill in the blanks if you can, because we don't fucking know what happens in this movie. It's suffice to say, anyway, that there's... It's content in this. It's an hour and a half long, yet it's all over the place, isn't it?
It is all over the place. I mean, so I think we could probably surmise the plot very simply as, because I mean, it's I guess they've taken it from a very sort of traditional place of someone turns up at Holmes's place and says, there's a crime, or I'm about to commit a crime, and then he solves it. That's kind of the plot, right? And in this instance, this Queen Victoria turns up, said someone's going to kill her, and he's got X amount of days to solve the case, and then, you know, slapstick adventures then come out.
But they kind of hinge a lot of all the plot and the comedy on just the fact that the pair of them are just fucking idiots, and that they've got no right to be these kind of big, famous duo of crime fighters, if you like.
Yeah, but like you say, it is all over the place, because like various bits, Holmes exhibits the kind of very, you know, Sherlock Holmesy kind of analytical mind sort of thing. So then, and they kind of take it all over the place. Like at some points, he is actually, you know,
pretty right. good.
Yeah, he's like, yeah. Oh, this and this and this and then this, and you're like, okay, fair enough. And then other times, he's completely wrong. They do the ape. Several times, actually, probably too much, the Guy Ritchie Sherlock Holmes sequences where he kind of does the internalization, which is really good, I think, in those films. It kind of really, it brings to life something that is quite dry in the fact that someone's analyzing something. So they have, like, you know, him playing out everything in his mind, first of all, with, like, you know, mm-hmm. Hit solar plexus, go for eyes, do this, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
They ate that a few times, and like it doesn't ever pan out. But
no, it never seems to work for our Holmes in this movie. But yeah, yes, you say he does this kind of split thing where he doesn't, then he's never quite sure how he's playing this character. He's either spot on, and he does, you know, judging by the smell of a certain article of clothing, how heavy he is, what he's had for breakfast, he can tell where he's coming. So he does all that kind of mind palace-y type stuff. But yeah, and they'll just be a complete idiot and eat an onion, a raw onion, because it's supposed to help you do X, Y, and Z in terms of your metabolism. It's just, and it'll do like, it's, apart from that, the Watson character, John C. Reilly, is the big wasted opportunity, because I think...
At least he's consistent, though. He's like consistently, he plays that sort of wonderful, naive stupidity, and... He does that. He plays that kind of character well, but there's just no material for him here, really.
But I think the problem is, I think the material is all. Well, it seems to me like there was a script of sorts, but they wanted to let those two basically create the comedy in terms of improv, I reckon. Mm. And you can see and feel some of it is just where they've had a 100 takes at something, and they found the most sort of half. Decent
version. The one in focus.
yeah.
Was it just me, or like was the overdub on this film, like especially on Will Ferrell's Holmes, was really, really obvious, especially at the start? So yeah, I think he probably had a couple of stabs at the English accent and then just kept layering it over the top of the soundtrack, because his voice seems to be completely detached from his mouth and the film.
Yeah, it happens quite a lot as well with Kelly MacDonald's character. They do overdub a lot of that. I did notice the exact same thing with her character, but not so much with Will Ferrell. But she says a couple of things where you can clearly see she's not facing the camera. It's dead on, and you can see that the mouth is going places that the
words aren't.
Yeah, but I think, yeah, there's plenty of overdubs. But I mean, just to get back on what John C. Reilly team, because I just wanted to say that basically if they switched this role, if they'd actually gone with him being the smart character, dry, intelligent, basically picking up after Will Ferrell, so that kind of dynamic, him being a bumbling idiot and actually just being the face and the poster boy for this kind of detective agency, if you like, and John C. Reilly being behind the scenes, being the brains, then it could have worked. But they had this, because they had this dynamic, which was a weird squash of two Dinlows, it really didn't work. Have you seen that film, which has got Michael Caine in it?
Yes, the Ben Kingsley, Michael Caine, Without a Clue, where it flips it, doesn't it? Like you say, Michael Caine is the figurehead, but is an idiot, and Ben Kingsley is, you know, the Dr. Watson who's actually solving everything and feeding him.
They should have just done basically a remake of that dynamic, and it would have been like instantly 100% better, I think. Even if some of the storytelling and some of the comedy beats was like just like a remake, it would have made sense, because the two of them on screen together are good, and it's just a wasted opportunity. One of the bits of trivia I read is that Sacha Baron Cohen was actually in the running to play.
And I would guess that would have been, like you say, a switch of roles there. I imagine he would have been the Holmes and then Farrell would have been the Watson. That may have worked a bit better, I think, maybe potentially.
But that was stuck in sort of some sort of development hell. And then obviously they just sort of thought, oh, let's stick these two together and just hope it floats, really. And it doesn't, does it?
No. I mean, like, the jokes, for what they're worth, are there are plenty of them. They do tend to get signposted. I actually wrote in my notes there at the start that Watson's sitting there going, okay, that's my manuscript done. All I need to do is let the ink dry. And he's like, oh, God, what's going to happen instantly. It's like, oh, something's come in and now it's all over the floor and la, 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 la.
Yeah, as soon as he says it's like, it's my only copy, this is the only one I have, it's gone.
Yeah, yeah.
He sets it on fire, doesn't he, or something?
Yeah, I can't remember exactly how that planned out. I think I may have been crying a little bit at that point. Yeah,
there's a couple of things where they, you know, you said about the signposting stuff. They do make these ridiculous, like, modern comments or current modern comments about Trump and the presidency and women in film and pay, which is quite tongue-in-cheek, but it's like a fucking hammer to the testicles, isn't it, in terms of how it's delivered.
It's like it should be like a little winky nod and you go, oh, it's true because da 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 da. But it's just like they take it and then they, you know, when people over explain something like this podcast, they just like absolutely beat something to death because they're like, oh, and because of, you know, who would ever, you know, what we need, someone in the White House, it's a businessman. Imagine that happening. And there was also like three or four jokes where they're just describing modern things. And like, there's a really sort of long sequence after them been out of the piss the night before, where he's just describing House of Pancakes. He's like, what I like is cakes, like a big stack of cakes. One day we should maybe build a restaurant and we can stack them up and it would be the House of Cakes. And it's like, that's not funny. Then there's the fight scene where they reference pay-per-view.
Oh, God, yeah.
And then another one where they do the selfie and then you're like, this doesn't work.
Your Majesty, do you think I could have a picture of us together?
But who's going to take the photograph?
Oh, no, I'll take the photograph. You see, it's a type of a self photograph. I can take it, and I will be in it also.
You know what? I find to take the most attractive photographs, you need to purse your lips together like a duck-billed platypus.
Platypus face, chins up. Hey!
Hey! Hey, girl!
This is so old. Yeah. It's not even like last selfies were a thing. I know it's still a thing, but they were a big thing. You know, everyone took the piss out of them back like 10 years ago, right? But this is, we're making like a satirical look at selfies last year. It's just a bit pants, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not exactly finger on the pulse time, is it?
No, but there's this thing that happens about 40 minutes in where the energy and the whatever energy it has, but the goodwill that you apply to this movie as it starts just becomes bone dry, because after that 40-minute period, there's nothing to stick around for, because eventually everything will play out as you would imagine. The jokes don't come any better, and any kind of dynamic that the two have created or you potentially might go somewhere, it's obvious that it isn't at that point. So it's a very big switch-off moment, I think, after half an hour, 40 minutes. You either go, right, fuck that, or you go, oh, let's see how it goes.
But this film does have people walking out of it. So this, I think you're spot on. It's like that sort of point where you go, no, this isn't going to get any better. And like you say, very much like Movie 43, I think, when I heard about this, and I didn't really believe it could be as bad as people were saying. And I was kind of excited to watch this because I thought I might actually enjoy it to a certain degree, and then I'd be able to go, ha, no, it is funny, people are being a little bit too serious about it or whatever. But Spawn, it's about half an hour in, you're like, oh no, I've given this too much, you know, I've given it too much rope to sort of hang itself with, and hang itself it does.
The only thing I could say, I'm just looking at a still,
it's how it plays best actually, in just
a still picture. I noticed that the sets and everything and the costumes and everything look pretty good.
And production values are high, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I say that. There was that weird bit. So after the selfie scene, they knock out Queen Victoria and then they're trying to get rid of the body. But it's like the worst fake body that you've ever seen in your life. It's like, it's not even like human shape. It's clearly flat.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know whether that was intentional, was it?
Just what, to look so bad?
Yeah, maybe not. I don't know. It's a scene where they're cleaning the body of the guy that was baked in the cake, and they do like a parody of Ghost with the Patrick Swayze pottery scene with them.
Oh, yeah. There's various weird bits in this. There's
weird.
There's the song as well, which came out of nowhere.
Song. Yeah, the musical section, which is it's a bit like another film, which I can't remember, where he thinks about his life and decides that being a prick to Watson isn't the best way to go, and to be friends, and that he's in love with him as a friend, and he has this big musical number where he's crying, and he realizes what love is, and then basically goes and rescues him from certain death.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's it.
But they do it in a scene like a bit like the Muppet movie, where there's just like a stuck in musical section for no real reason. It just feels weird. And everyone's singing. And what do you think?
What of that particular section? It was, I actually said out loud on my own, and I don't often speak to myself alone. I just said like, a fucking song now. It's because it was so out of tone. And I think this is the problem with the whole film, is that conceptually there's some various bits that can work and cannot work, but it wasn't funny. And like, just being out of place doesn't make something funny. Like when we did The Love Guru, they had some song sections. And weirdly, in that, it was kind of the best stuff, because the songs were kind of funny, or at least catchy.
Yeah.
Whereas in this, it was just, oh, look, a song. Oh, look. Ha, ha. And I didn't know whether or not they were trying to take the piss out of a Disney film or...
Well, Well, I don't think the song, as you say, I don't think the song was actually played for laughs. I think it was supposed to have like this heartfelt moment because no one, they kind of visit a lot of the other characters that you've met along the way in this movie, in this song scene. And they're all being quite genuine and sincere with their loved ones and stuff. It's kind of a weird, very weird like take on that kind of genre where that sort of thing happens, but on a serious, in a proper musical. This seemed to just completely waste 2.5-3 minutes.
Maybe they had to fill up some time. They're like, oh shit, this film's going to be 1 hour 27. We need to fill in the 3 minutes.
They kind of wanted to, I feel like they wanted to, you know, put this feeling of this that he was having across, would just not do it in a, do it in a different way and inject something else into the movie. But this didn't work at all. I don't think anything works. I think that's such a shame because nobody works on this. Rebecca Hall does, I guess, all right.
Yeah, she's all right with what's well given. She's like, basically, I think actually the reason that she comes across all right is she's kind of the only straight person in the whole entire film. Yes, everyone else is zany and weird. And then she's like comes across as like the only foil to all this kind of thing.
Steve Coogan is okay. I liked him for the brief scene that he was in it.
Can I ask you a question? Since we're doing this podcast, we kind of our guests have taught us things, I believe. And ever since Amy Mormon's been on the first time round, I pay attention to the soundtrack
in the
film. And very much like the rest of this, I felt that this soundtrack for this film was like all over the show. Did you notice this at all?
Yeah, so apparently there was a composer that did some original music for it, but it never made it to the screen version of it. So they have like this weird music of the time, I'd call it. So some sort of orchestral music in places. Well, but
it's like a piss take of the Sherlock Holmes, like the Robert Downey Jr. films. It's not maybe a piss take, but I think it might actually just be the music from that film. That very much that, I wouldn't even know what instrument it is. You probably have a better guess than that than me. They have that, and then, like you say, right next to contemporary songs.
Yeah, they almost like drum and bass a lot of it up as well. And also, it's got some sort of gangstery, hip-hoppy style to some of the songs as well. It just doesn't fit. There's some segues and sequences where they're doing stuff, and it's hit to some sort of modern tempo. But yeah, it's weird, isn't it? It's weird.
Yeah, it's the music these kids listen to is just noise these days.
I was like,
oh my God, none of it fits. None of it, there's no tone. There's no continuity throughout the film. No, you just go, I know what this is. I'm feeling comfortable now.
There it goes. Throw it at the screen. Now what we'll notice is a big steaming pile of crap.
And the other thing that grated was the Billy Zane moment.
Oh, yeah, God.
Why?
Yeah, they're on the. There wasn't any other cameos in the movie, so I don't see the point of that. They go on the. They make this big joke about the Titanic being, being the unsinkable ship and everything, and everyone's going on to have a fantastic future that's boarding this, which is a bit tasteless, to be honest. I know.
It's been a couple hundred years, but still too soon.
But Billy Zane pops up. Don't they actually refer to him as Billy Zane as well? Yeah. He's not like a different character that's part of the crew or something. He's like, oh look, there's Billy Zane.
Yeah, and they go, oh look, he's glorious. But then he's kind of playing the character that he did in Titanic, which is obviously why he's there at the Titanic bit. But they've already referred to him as Billy Zane, so they kind of smashed down the fourth wall.
Yeah,
and then whilst they're smashing it down, they're trying to pretend that they haven't, and piecing it together behind them. But it was horrible. I really, really wanted to like it. I really wanted to be one of the, you know, five people, one of the 3.8 out of 10 that enjoyed this in any way, shape, or form. I really, really did. I wanted to be controversial and different. I'm going through like a goth rebellion phase in my life. I don't want to be like the rest of you people. And I really did. And I feel bad that I can't find a single good thing to say about this film.
Well, I can say that basically I think the set dressers and the costume designers did a fantastic job.
It's a bit reach now, isn't it? Miguel, or his shoes were nice, is kind of what you're saying.
Yeah, and they tried hard. Did they try hard? No.
No.
What did it make money-wise? Let's move on.
Well, let's see if we were that wrong. No, we're not that wrong. Okay, so its budget was $42 million, and I remember none of these budgets ever include the promotional stuff, which can easily be double what the actual budget is. It took $7 million in the opening weekend in America, grossed 30, and then cumulative worldwide took 40.5. So they made a loss on this film. Everyone made a loss on this film.
I'd say the only good thing about it is the fact that it's 90 minutes long, but even that's just too long anyway, isn't it? 90 minutes.
I mean, it's spot on. When we see shit films, they do tend to be that 1.5 hour magic number, don't they?
Yeah.
It's like they know, it's like this is like the least we can get away with and still call it a film. However, we don't want to spend any more time than we possibly would have to by having this there. So yeah, good old 90 minutes. Dolby Surround 7.1. Aurora 11.1. IMAX. It was IMAX. IMAX 6-track. And no, it's way in colour. So there you go.
Which adds no value to it at all.
Aspect ratio 2.39:1.
Do you want to hear some gaffes and trivia or anything like that?
No, I want to go home. No. To be honest, it's the only reason I went through the whole of this film. I just said, I've got to watch all this because if Chris comes up with a gaffe or a trivia or a bit that I've not seen, then I'll be most disappointed.
I've got some crazy trivia for you anyway, whether you like it or not. It's coming out of my mouth. So according to Deadline, after disastrous test screening, Sony attempted to sell the film to Netflix, who declined. So they were basically trying to get themselves out of it. Speaking to Empire magazine, Steve Coogan, who plays obviously Gustav Klinger, we talked about earlier on, who basically pops up and pops back again, said, "I think in 20 years' time, when the dust has settled and people are able to look at Holmes and Watson objectively, I think people will say it's still rubbish." everyone said it was shite. Moriarty's trial, the judge draws particular attention to his gavel, which is his like hammer.
Yeah.
Apparently, British judges have never used gavels. Is that correct?
Oh, if it's true, then there's a lot of films that have that in there.
I don't know.
Like the beginning of Porridge. Send him down.
Do they?
Okay, maybe it's not a gavel. Right, maybe it's just like it's something in the hand, isn't it? Like a little, they have like a little knob. Yes. They smash against the camera.
They do. They have a little red, little wooden disc thing that they bang. Anyway, we'll have to Google that later.
Yeah.
The climax involves Queen Victoria aboard the Titanic. She died in 1901. The Titanic was ordered in 1908 and made its first voyage in 1912. So that would have been historically inaccurate. The Titanic did not set sail from London, England, but from the city of Southampton, which is 18 miles away from London. We know this because we are from Southampton.
Yeah, every day I go to the place from the Titanic when it sailed.
And
I lay a flower.
And we have a fantastic museum, the Titanic Museum, don't we, Matthew, in Southampton town where we live?
Hey, that's a great museum.
I've got a fact about the Titanic I'm going to share with you now. Even though the Titanic had four funnels, only three actually functioned. The last one was fake, built to balance the ship's lines and make it look more impressive. However, this last funnel did serve a function as a smokestack for the ship's massive galley. This is why when the Titanic is in shot, smoke can clearly be seen emanating from all four funnels.
Wow, fake funnel.
Round of applause. When Millie, this is a gaffe, when Millie, who's his little cat friend that he's got, a woman who was raised by cats for some reason, is eating an onion, a close-up clearly shows that it is an apple wrapped in onion skin.
Bastards.
There you go. Really, there are
I had others. A relative die in the Titanic.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah, he was a young one. He went as a cabin boy. Didn't make it out.
Oh, that's sad. My My grandma had tickets to go on the Titanic because they were Canadian. But for some reason, and my dad has told me this, but I don't remember, they didn't go. they didn't go because my dad is alive and so am I. But apparently that was a big thing. They were due to go on the Titanic and they never went.
That'd be a better story if we knew why.
I can't remember why. There was the family were due to go on it, and I'll find out for the next podcast, okay?
All right, yeah. Yes, like a little, you know, who do you think you are update.
Yeah, the thing is, if they had gone, there's a possibility that I wouldn't be here now doing this lovely podcast about Holmes and Watson.
Were they? Because how rich you were depended on how likely you were to survive.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know. Maybe they had a bit more money because they were Canadian. I don't know. Who knows? So that's the goofs and gaffs and trivia for you. You're welcome.
Review time. In the world of balance, and we're all about balance, we try to find, if we enjoyed it, then we try and find reviews that didn't enjoy it. If we didn't enjoy it, then we try and find some 10 out of 10s. And sometimes it's hard, but in this film, there was a fair old few, wasn't there?
Yeah, lots of people liked it because I think there's a lot of diehard sort of Will Farrell and John C. Reilly fans out there, which I would say, you know, I'm a fan of them, but I wouldn't stretch to writing a positive review based on the performance of them both in this movie. What have you got? You got a 10 out of 10, obviously you have. And you go first. Would you like to go first or do you like me to go first?
Either of those things I can do because I can listen and I can talk.
Right, so I'll go first then. So, oh dear, this is so funny. So this one is a 10 out of 10 offs and it's called Perfect Comedy. It's made, written by Weber Nine on the 30th of March 2019. And I shall do this in my best sort of voice of the time, of the era of Holmes and Watson.
I think they should all be in that era, yeah.
Okay. I don't know what the heck is wrong with people. Do not listen to all the kids' reviews. They don't even know who Will Farrell is. He is one of the best comedy actors and he is brilliant in this movie. I don't know what people want in a good comedy nowadays. They sure can't appreciate a good comedy. Maybe I'm too old. I don't know. But listen to me. Watch this movie and you will not be disappointed.
Was that someone of the time or just you with a cold?
Yeah, I just felt more posher than normal.
It works.
Okay, cool.
So that person likes it, right?
Like, yeah.
But that felt like a rage review rating. They probably thought it was about a 6, but because of they disagreed, because we see this a lot, don't we? They disagree with the rating.
Yeah, yeah.
They go and throw up one.
It's like the opposite is done as well on Rotten Tomatoes, where people see, I'm only
good. Oh, yeah. See, the whole internet's broken, man. It's got to get fixed.
They don't like women or they don't like other things. They decide to give it really bad scores and go, fuck you, because they're twats. But this, I suppose, is a harmless thing to do, is give something a good review if everyone else is giving it bad reviews. That's pretty harmless, isn't it?
Yeah. It's not,
the other way around's got a bit of, is a bit suspicious.
There's a bit of hate there. It's better be a lover than a hater.
Let's hear yours then, Matthew.
Mine is entitled Absolutely Fabulous and Josh O'Sullivan, 99, 17th of March, 2019. So, all these are very much more recent than normal because the film is very much more recent than normal. And I like this one because it's got such a mix of tone in there. I don't really care about that hoi polloi, American teenagers mostly, will have no idea whatsoever as to what is going on during this incredibly humorous indulgence in Victorian polysyllabic obfuscation and ancient retro wonderfully British humour. Well done, Mr. Cohen, and do not be discombobulated by the awful 3.5 race on here, because I'm giving it a 10 and watching it again immediately after my morning herbal smoke. Break, lol, but true.
This is a pothead.
It's a pothead. Yes,
they swallowed the dictionary.
Well, I don't know if they swallowed the dictionary or just fell asleep on their keyboard because there's some the spelling's not like.
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, but they got the point across. Basically, I think the stand you are, maybe the more enjoyable it might be. Yeah. This one is just a great comedy. It's a 10 out of 10. It's by Anita Warnes, and she wrote this on the 9th of January 2019. I think she might be a bit of a Cockney geezer.
Right,
I really can't believe all the negative comments on here. This is a great comedy from Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly. It is slapstick and silly, but just what you would expect from these two. It isn't supposed to be an accurate portrayal of Sherlock Holmes, and I read one comment that read, "It isn't historically accurate." No, it isn't. It isn't meant to be. It's comedy. I would say if you love slapstick and you have enjoyed other films by these guys, then go and see it. I found it very funny and entertaining, and that's all it's meant to be.
Okay. Is it slapstick, though? I mean, I guess there is some slapstick moments, I guess.
There is slapsticity in it. Yeah, you got another one?
I have, and similar, I imagine this one to have been in a sort of street ruffian accent, which is kind of cool the way we're going about this. 10 out of 10, there are some miserable people out there, is the title of the fucking review by Ricky Travis, 68, on the 16th of March, 2019. Forget all the hate. Start. Whoa.
Ricky Travis even sounds like a fucking tart, doesn't he?
He does. He, where are you? Ricky Travis. And right, so if you're that close to 69, you use 69, right? 68, you bottled it, mate. Is what I'm saying to you there. Ricky Travis 69 would have been a much more of a wide-o name. Yeah. So, yeah, there you go. Here is him. Forget all the haters. This is a perfect Friday night antidote to the working week. Unshamedly crass and politically incorrect. Grab a few beers, stick this on. Otherwise, stick to your PC, snowflake, all-inclusive mediocrity. After all, it's your miserable life.
Oh, God.
Oh.
Don't do the whole like snowflake bloody politically correct argument, because it doesn't make a difference if it's shit. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and you shouldn't throw the words politically correct around like a fucking insult. It's like, oh my God, you're just being politically correct. It's just a really fundamental way of saying, oh my God, you're just being a decent human being.
Well, actually, he's wrong as well, because there isn't anything politically incorrect in this movie. If you think about it, we've really just watched it literally today and yesterday.
Yeah.
And it's there's no political incorrectness. They make jokes about the unfairness of women's pay, jokes about women's positions in the financial and working
world. So if anything, you would say this film was proper woke, and this guy shouldn't really be in here.
And they make comments and judgments about the presidency and all that sort of thing, and they show both sides of it. But it's so it's not nothing to do with politically correct, but puerile humour and twatty humour, yes. But turn your brain off and watch it if you like this sort of thing, absolutely. But there's no snowflakiness about it. That's what annoys me about that sort of comment, because it's not like they're making fun of any minority or doing anything. It's pretty good.
Yeah, it's not like movie 43, which was probably in many places politically incorrect. That was
a massively politically incorrect movie. That was every part of that movie was dripping in political correctness.
This is just simply not funny, and I don't think there's anything politically incorrect about being not funny, as we're living through right now with our government just not funny anymore.
I just mentioned something. I'm just looking at the cast, right? Just scrolling through the cast, and they're all white people.
Yeah, this isn't very inclusive, this film. But then, no. I think it's quite a common misconception that sort of Victorian era Britain was a almost completely white place, but it wasn't. The empire was in full swing back then. So
yeah, absolutely. And I was just thinking that is unusual. I mean, there is no people of color in this movie whatsoever. Which is interesting. I hadn't noticed it when I was actually watching it, but now just flicking through the cast. That is shocking. Mm. Anyway, there you go. So another reason why not to watch it.
Yeah. You are, unless you're a white middle-class man, you are not representing this film. Do not bother watching it.
Don't be such a snowflake with your political incorrectness, Matthew.
Stop being a decent human being. You fucking moron.
So that's it then, Matthew. The Holmes and Watson. We've officially... You right there?
Sorry, I just knocked over a small... I don't really often question these things, but it looks like a sheepacorn, which is actually a lip gloss pot.
A what? A sheep or what?
Well, it's a sheep, but it's got a unicorn horn and a pink tail. So I'm guessing it's a sheepacorn.
Christ almighty. You said sheepacorn. I felt like it was some sort of weird Mexican dish.
Oh, I wish I had a weird Mexican dish instead of a plastic half sheep, half unicorn in my hand right now.
Yeah, so I think we can pretty much recommend that you avoid Holmes and Watson. But I don't think anyone listening to this podcast would probably choose to watch this out of some sort of morbid curiosity and see, is it that bad? And it is that bad.
Thing is, you won't believe us. If you're a big Will Ferrell, John C. Reilly fan, you're not going to believe us. I didn't believe us. and, you know, it is poor. But, you know, by all means, go out, watch it. See if you can get all the way through it.
Let us know.
Let us know if you managed to get it. I think we should do like a, you know, a sponsored Holmes and Watson watch where, you know, everyone posts in how far they got into the film before either losing the will to live or actually turning it off.
Well, maybe we will do that in our when we release. That's stupid. I was just saying when we release the podcast because they're listening to it now.
They're listening to it right this minute.
Oh my god! When we release. Oh, hang on. Yeah.
What we can do is you listen to the podcast, then you do the thing, and then we'll go back. Yeah. We'll edit the podcast, put some more stuff in, and then release it again, like fucking God. Avengers Endgame did. Let's just re-releasing it until we hit a million billion viewers, listeners, even.
It's gonna happen.
Like fucking podcast Inception.
Christ. So that's enough of us two middle-aged white men banging on about this shitty film. So what do you fancy doing next? Anything in particular? Should we do this Diana or Jupiter Ascending? What do you fancy?
Everything. I really don't want to watch either of those films.
To be honest, we haven't done a biopic, so it would be quite a good idea to do Diana.
We have never done a biopic, no.
And this is supposed to be dog shit, so... I have it on my Sky Plus, so just saying.
I think I do. I'll have to check. I think I do.
I taped it. Check if you've taped it. All right. If you haven't, we'll have to find something else. But
if you've got the Video Plus code for it, I could use that. And then
I'll lend you my cassette.
That's cool.
As long as you don't tape over it.
Just put the tabs out, then I won't be tempted.
So as usual, I'll do the social media gubbins now. If you like what you hear and you hear what you like, just like us on our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter and just search for the Movie Bunker Podcast. And we've got a web page as well. And on all the platforms that you get your podcast from, if you can, give us a little review. Reviews help us get up the ladder, so to speak, and more people might actually listen to us. And if you want to recommend us to a friend or whatever, then please do. It doesn't help. It helps us, but it also will help you. You'll feel nicer and kinder for it in this world we live in, which is not very pleasant. So saying something nice about our podcast.
That's it. End on a fucking high.
So that's it from me. That's the pleading over. I have to plead every episode. So
We have to do it. Cool. All right, then. So
until next time.
Goodbye.
Pod out.
Still not going to catch on.
That's shit, isn't it? Cheerio, then.
Cheerio.